With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's a great football team with a lot of moral fiber and a lot of character, and they showed it.
Shout, a Buffalo football podcast, hosted by Matt Parrino and Ryan Talbot.
No place else you'd rather be than right here, right now. When it's too tough for them, it's just right.
Presented by Syracuse.com and NYUP.com.
The Bills make me wanna. Yeah!
Bills Mafia, round two is in the books. Interesting Friday. For as much talk as we had about going into this draft about trading up, trading down in the first round, potential moves in the second round, three picks have been made. No trades have been made. And the Bills sit here now with two edge rushers and a new swing tackle. We're going to get into all sorts of breakdown of all of this. I already see some actions in the comments. This is the Buffalo Bills football podcast, draft edition. These weekend draft shows, it's our second year doing these, Ryan. And I think they're always fun, you know, reacting to seeing all the reactions on social media, writing up some stories and getting on here and diving into the picks. And listen, today more than even yesterday, I thought that there was like a half and half reaction to the Gregory Rousseau trade. This or the draft pick, what happened today, a defensive end and an offensive tackle. I think this has been a very interesting day worth of reactions.
Yeah, absolutely. And I noticed in the comments here, it says no CB. The Bills did add a CB. Carlos Basham. Come on, CB. We got one. Don't worry about it, Buffalo. Listen, I get it. I love the passion. I love the fact that fans are so upset right now because they look at cornerback as a need here, but they do have Levi Wallace. They do have Dane Jackson. Let me read some names off for you, Matt. These are still free agents, according to SpotTrack.com. Some older than others, Casey Hayward, Richard Sherman, obviously, that could come in here. You have Steven Nelson. I'm just kind of going down the list. You could bring back Josh Norman, Buster Screen, I should say, Brian Poole, Bashaud Breeland, and there's more. There's a lot more. There's a long list of available cornerbacks still out there on the market. I don't know if I said DJ Hayden, but DJ Hayden's out there as well. So there's options inside, outside. There's still day three of the draft, and I get it. Some Bills fans are sitting there saying you're not going to find a starter on day three of the draft. Well, the Bills added Dane Jackson last year in round seven, and he flashed in those limited opportunities. So who's to say that they can't find someone in round five that can't come in, make the most of that opportunity? Levi Wallace, undrafted free agent. The Bills are kind of good at finding these guys that fit their system late in the draft. So relax, have some patience, and know that there's also talent available in free agency.
Let's get into, I want to, before we get into these two picks and break them down a little bit, I do want to talk about the strategy because it's something that Brandon Bean got into here a little bit. And, first and foremost, I thought from his press conference about an hour ago, an interesting detail came out. I asked them how much they were tracking Carlos Basham, because he did make it clear when he started talking, he was sticking out on their board. And he said they were following it and throughout the course of the second round. And as their pick got closer, they started to take calls about a trade, and they actually struck a deal with an NFC team to move out of the second round and into the third round, add another pick. Actually, I think he said picks. So we didn't get the details of what that actually, like what the parameters of the deal were, but it was, the deal was made. I think they agreed upon it, 3 picks before they were going to pick. And, but he gave them a caveat. If our guy is on the board here, we're going to stay in this spot and we're going to take him. That guy was Boogie Basham. Now, he also mentioned that, let me see here. I want to get the list of actual draft picks here because I want to go through a couple of them. He said both day one and day two, the reason why they didn't take a cornerback, it had nothing to do with the roster. And I think that this goes back to what we've been talking about in terms of their approach to the draft on day one and day two. We've said this a million times at this point, Ryan. You know, I don't think it's lip service that they're saying we're following our draft board. So if a cornerback is sticking out, or it's close, it's in a bucket of players, and there's a Boogie Basham and an Ife Melifonwu and you know, who are a Trill Williams, for you know, whoever you want to throw in the mix there, a Sean Wade. Say they're all in that bucket together. The grades aren't very much of a difference. Then I think you start to entertain, you know, the differences and what you maybe need a little bit more because the grades are so similar. But in the case of the second round pick, when they pulled the trigger on Boogie Basham, he was so far and away the highest graded guy on their board. Listen, you know, Jeff Leggold from ESPN, he puts out his top 100 every year. And I was looking through his list. He had Boogie Basham ranked at number 32. So just thinking about that, it's one evaluator. So, you know, you got to take that with a grain of salt. But if the Bills had an end of the first round grade, early second round grade on Basham, the value there of the position too, when you bake that in, it's super important. He said what happened was both times that they were going to pick in the first round and the second round, a couple cornerbacks went before they took the pick, or corners that they had a high grade on. Now I'm looking through here. Asante Samuel Jr. went at 47. I'm sure that they probably would have considered that late in the round. And then no DBs really went, but more so in the first round when you had Greg Newsome and Eric Stokes go right before they pick. So the opportunity, what I'm getting at here, the opportunity just wasn't there to take a cornerback yet on day one or day two.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you summed it up really well. Going back to that trade talk, the one thing he did say is it would have netted, they would have moved back to the third round. You almost have to wonder if it would have also given them a fourth round maybe this year because they were missing that fourth round pick, and maybe that was intriguing. But like you said, they told the team there was one player they didn't want to move out of that pick for, and it ended up being Carlos Basham Jr. We've seen this take place before in the NFL. Go back to the 2018 draft. The Bills had a deal in place with the Denver Broncos to move up to get Josh Allen. And the Broncos said, yep, they had the parameters worked out. They said, yeah, we'll make that trade as long as one player is not there on the board for us. And sure enough, when that trade came, that trade got squashed because it was Bradley Chubb that they wanted. So this does happen all the time, more often than you think, where you have a trade worked out with another team, and then that one player that is on the board that you don't want to part ways with is still there. So, you know, they're doing their jobs. The one thing I'll say is that's interesting is someone from the Draft Network, after the Carlos Basham pick, said that the Bills drafted the better edge rusher in round two than round one. Now, mind you, you know, that's unfair. We heard that last year, too, with Gabriel Davis and Isaiah Hodgins about flipping those two guys around. We obviously saw that Gabriel Davis was an absolute star. We don't know which edge rush is going to be better in the NFL coming out of the gate. But it's interesting that some did have it graded that way nonetheless.
Sorry about that. I was gone for a minute. I had to track down my Monster Energy drink because still got some hours to go here. And Elliot, what's funny about that? He says, Matt, you're going to be up all night. I could drink this whole thing right now on this show and we can sign off and I could put my head on a pillow and it's game over. It doesn't matter. Yes, I'm very interested to see what these two players look like in camp, and I think that's a good transition, and what kind of guy makes a bigger impact in 2021. But let's transition into what this defensive line looks like now, because the Bills pulled the trigger on that draft pick, bring in Boogie Basham from Wake Forest. The production was pretty solid, had 5 sacks in 7 games, double-digit sacks the year before in a full season. And I think that it's an intriguing piece. Both of these guys, Gregory Rousseau and Basham, in different ways, project as versatile pieces that you can kind of move around the defensive line quite a bit. And that gives them options. And I think that's what they, I think what they learned last year, and we'll see if they address the, you know, one tech spot. I know they got Starr coming back, but I really do want to see them add another one, maybe two, you know, true one tech space eating defensive tackles. We'll see if they do that. But, you know, having these two guys now is that you can figure out what they do well over time, and there's no rush because of the situation they're walking into to get them ready to play right away. You have Mario Addison, you have Jerry Hughes and AJ Epenesa, who's expected to take a jump, and you can kind of cushion things with Mario Addison. You don't have to move on from Mario Addison right now. You don't even have to move on from Mario Addison by the time the training camp starts. You know, you want those battles. You can make that decision when you get closer to the season. If you have four or five edge rushers that are ready to go and part of that group is not Mario Addison, then you make that decision. Then you move on. But as it stands right now, there is healthy competition that's now been added. And you also have a chance to embrace that growth mindset that Sean McDermott talks about. Come here, be the best version of yourself. Learn it from the guys that they want setting the example, and go from there.
Yeah. It's interesting. Mario Addison, I know, like right after the Carlos Basham pick, a lot was out there in terms of the post June 1st designation, how much money the Bills could save, kind of saying goodbye to him before any of this has happened. And that may end up being the case. Absolutely. But like you just said, let the competition happen. You don't know what's going to happen from now until, you know, June either, or July, injury wise play, in terms of how ready these players are. Buffalo's defensive end room is all of a sudden very packed, because in addition to Jerry Hughes, in addition to Mario Addison, you now add Carlos Basham Jr. You have AJ Epenesa, you have Rousseau, you have Daryl Johnson, F.A. Obada, some of these other guys that were on the practice squad last year, Cox Jr., et cetera, the list goes on and on. So some talented players are going to go between now and the start of the regular season. There's no doubting that. But it would be foolish just to make a move now just for the sake of making a move. Let it play out like you said. The one thing I do like, though, is the versatility of these players. You mentioned it. You know, Rousseau is a mountain of a man. There were some Eric Edholm of Yahoo Sports mentioned he would love to see him get actually balloon closer to what Calais Campbell plays at, which is about 300 pounds. I don't think we're going to see that. I think you're going to see him in that 260, 270 range, but big, lengthy, the huge wingspan. You have Basham Jr. that can play three technique. He can play on the outside. So when you get to those third down passing situations in the next few years, and it's an obvious passing situation, you could have a really interesting looking defensive line where you're pinning the ears back on some of these players and how you're lining them up. So I like what they're doing. I get what they're doing. They're staying true to their board. And the more talent you obviously acquire early in the drafts, you're hoping that one or two of them can pan out. And then you're going to be set again 5, 6, 7 years if you hit on the right players.
So I want to bring up Chris Trapasso, who I'm so excited to get him back on the show after all this is wrapped up and we can really break down all of these picks from a draft expert perspective. But I was actually looking at one of the stories that he wrote after the Senior Bowl, and he wrote up a couple of the guys that really improved their stock. And just check this out. This is what he wrote about Basham, who really shined that week. Much has been made about his athleticism and size blend, and it allowed him to dominate the week of practices in the trenches at the Senior Bowl. While he didn't play in the game, he made his mark on coaches and scouting departments when most are in attendance leading into the game, with an array of power and quickness regardless of where he was lined up and which type of blocker he faced. Basham projects as the trendy defensive end on early downs and nickel rusher in clear-cut passing situations. He probably was a first-round prospect before the Senior Bowl. Now you can lock him in there and he can go top 20. Now that didn't happen, obviously. I got to look at his pro day numbers, and maybe that's where maybe his go ahead.
4.62. I believe he ran at 272.
Wow.
That's and he had a really good vertical, some like 38 inch, because I wrote this was in my story, 38 inch vertical. He popped in terms of his pro day. So for whatever reason, he didn't go in the first round, but it wasn't his pro day. He leapt off the page there too. Because he's explosive for his size. And that's something that when I was doing the research, I said, man, this guy, if he can put it all together, could be a very scary defensive lineman. And the Bills could be putting something together now, where a lot of fans are sitting back now saying they didn't go after a cornerback, they didn't do this. If the Bills are absolute nightmares for opposing quarterbacks in terms of pressure, in terms of hits, in terms of sacks, that's going to make the secondary that much better. That's going to make the linebacker play that much better. That's going to help Buffalo eventually maybe defeat the Kansas City Chiefs and some of these other teams that are going to be contending in the AFC, because all of a sudden this is a very loaded conference in terms of quarterbacks, in terms of team roster building. Browns are having one heck of a draft. They obviously went pretty late this past season in the playoffs. They made it all the way to the Chiefs and they fought them tooth and nail down to the wire. So it's not going to get any easier for the Bills, but they found a weakness on this team and they're trying to address it as best they possibly can.
Here's a good question. Cam Greasy over on YouTube. Does a cornerback or a defensive end beat the Chiefs? I say a pass rusher. And I got to say, I agree with that logic. Now, listen, you can add all the pass rushers in the world. And if Patrick Mahomes has a game and, you know, they've rebuilt their offensive line now and that tends to hold up in a game, say, it's going to be tough to beat them. But you're going to have to play better across the board. But I think what this does, adding two potential pass rushers that can, you know, add a different level of play. Like all the projections are out there. You put up a story that, you know, maybe a Chandler Jones type ceiling for Gregory Rousseau, which would be the grand slam that everybody's, you know, hoping and praying for inside the building there. I think I saw Marlon Davidson as the comp for Boogie Basham from Lance Zierlein at NFL.com. There's all these fun little projections to make. And, you know, we'll see. I even think somebody said, you know, I can't remember, a JPP for Gregory Rousseau possibly. And we saw how effective he was in the Super Bowl against Patrick Mahomes. So the thing that about a pass rush is it's not only about what you do, you know, in terms of bringing the quarterback down, it's affecting him. What Brandon Bean talked about, because that's what helps to create turnovers. When you don't get pressure in a game of that magnitude, as good as their secondary is, you have Tre'Davious White out there. You have Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer and Taron Johnson, who had that big pick six against the Baltimore Ravens. Even that's not good enough. And I know you want to add more players, but when you're not getting pressure on the quarterback. So now if you ratchet up that pressure, maybe it doesn't necessarily equal more sacks or tons of more sacks, but just that pressure alone, a consistent pressure and, you know, not as many gaps in when you're applying that pressure keeps the pressure on Mahomes enough to maybe force some turnovers in that game.
Yeah, only one drive stalled out for the Chiefs in that championship game, and that was where Mahomes threw a 30-yard, maybe 40-yard bomb down the field to Tyreek Hill that hit him on the hands and he dropped it. That's the only drive that stalled out that entire game because Buffalo could not get after him. They sacked him, I believe, once in that game, but for the most part, he was sitting back there in the pocket. He was just waiting for Tyreek Hill to get open, just waiting for Travis Kelce to get open. So maybe these guys don't bring him down, but someone like Rousseau that has an 83-inch wingspan can get his hand on a ball, can bat it up into the air, can take away a passing lane. Maybe a Carlos Basham Jr. can crash the pocket on the interior or at Oliver, and you still have Jerry Hughes. You've added talent to the front, the area that could not do anything in that championship game.
You and Ryan, funny thing about this too, I want you to continue on this thing. I feel like there's been this, and I don't know if this is your observation on this as well. There's been this like 180 in the last 24 hours for weeks and months, a group of fans that wanted edge rusher. Mm. Get me that edge rusher. Brandon Bean gets him too. And I feel like there's some of those people that aren't thrilled about it. So I guess you can't win.
No, I think what the fans were thinking of, and I get it because the Carlos Basham pick threw me for a loop. I was not expecting another edge rusher. I think that's what happened. They add one in round one. So now Bills fans are sitting there saying, okay, well, it's going to be a cornerback or it's going to be a wide receiver, maybe a running back in play, one of those other picks. But good teams do this. They double down on a position. They add talent in certain areas. And the Bills had the opportunity to do so. And where I was going with this is Eric Washington, defensive line coach for the Bills, former defensive coordinator and defensive line coach in Carolina. One thing his teams have always done is sack the quarterback well. Now, last year didn't really happen in his first year with the Bills, but you almost have to give him put a little asterisk next to that, because there was no training in the offseason. There were no OTAs. There was no mini camp. There was no preseason. And yeah, there were a lot of former Panthers on this team, but still, there's something completely different about working with a whole new unit overall than with a team, you know, with a team that you had been with for many, many years. So he's going to have these young kids in there. He's going to have some of these players entering year two in the system. He's also going to have some of those players that are actually entering year five, year six, year seven. Mario Addison, the Vernon Butlers of the world, to a lesser extent, Brian Cox Jr., because he was in Carolina for quite a few years. That's going to be a good mesh in terms of talent that's been with him for a long time, talent that's only been with him for 1 year, and now new talent. But he gets the best out of these players, and I think you are really going to see a drastic spike in sack totals in 2021.
Indeed. If you have any questions, if there's anything that you want us to cover here before we get out, we're going to talk about the Bills' third round selection as well, and maybe look ahead to tomorrow when they have 2/5, a 6th, and a 7th. So it'll be a little bit of a wait at the start of things tomorrow, unless Brandon Bean's able to move back into the 4th round. I am pretty surprised that they didn't make a deal. I almost feel like for Brandon Bean not to make a deal in a draft would be a story in and of itself. But I think that, you know, when the rosters is built as it is and set up for success, you don't have to chase anything. You can kind of let things play out and be a little bit more patient. And that's what we've actually seen in this draft, is a patient Brandon Bean who's let the kind of draft come to him a little bit, especially in a year where I don't think you want to overreact or be a little bit hasty and get, you know, neurotic, for lack of a better term, in how you approach, you know, your pick, because this is a draft where you can sense the uncertainty across the league in terms of this, you know, where players are going, the information that they have on a player. I mean, just for instance, you know, the Spencer Brown, who I should give myself a pat on the back. First time, I think, doing mock drafts where I hit the player, the pick, and the round. So I had him going to the Bills at 93, and he didn't opt out. They postponed the season, never got it going, but they pushed it off to the spring. When they got things going in the spring, Northern Iowa, he had already started training for the NFL draft, so he didn't go back to play. He had options to maybe transfer. He decided not to because, you know, he wanted to, if his teammates couldn't play, he wasn't going to play. And so he worked with Joe Staley out in California, started, you know, continuing to work on his body. I mean, this is an athletic freak, 6'8", 311 pounds. He was telling us on the Zoom call that he can bench, his max was 500 on the bench, 600 on the squat. He's just like a marvel of a human being. And I absolutely love this pick. I love the pick when I did it in the mock, where you got him, the value. I think that this guy's got a second round grade in a lot of people's books. He's a little bit raw. He played at a lower level, but the intangibles, the measurables, we talk about this over and over again. This is what this regime wants. This is what they covet. They want guys that have the size and a lot of the intangibles, like the work ethic, the love of the game, the love to compete. You've heard that in all three of these guys already. And then you can get him in your program. And then you can kind of build them the way that you want. But I think he slots in as the swing tackle to start. He can play left or right, Brandon Bean said tonight. And then you just kind of see what happens. Everybody kind of, a couple people tweeted, well, they just signed everybody back and they just signed the two tackles back. Well, check out Darrell Williams' deal. I mean, they can get out of that if they really wanted to after 1 year. So essentially, it's a 3-year deal with an out after one. And if Spencer Brown comes in here and is absolutely lights out in preseason, then ends up coming in for an injured starter and shines, you know, you got to pay Josh Allen a lot of money coming up. Tremaine Edmonds, potentially a lot of money coming up. And so if you can save some money by moving some things around a little bit, do some housekeeping with some of these draft picks, you know, Jerry Hughes's contract's coming up. Do you want to re-up him at 34 years old? Well, now you got Gregory Rousseau and Carlos Basham, who you could start to develop and hopefully make that decision easier if you want to go a different direction.
Yeah, this is my favorite pick of the draft so far, and I know third round, just an athletic freak. You said it. I'm a big fan of Math Bomb on Twitter is his user handle. He tracks something called relative athletic scores from 1987 to 2021. No offensive tackle has graded higher than Spencer Brown. He literally had a perfect 10 out of 10 score on this this different grading chart. So no offensive tackle has ever graded better than Spencer Brown. So that gives you some promise. You mentioned the 500 pound bench. I put a video of that in the Five Things to Know article on our site. Check it out. You know, it's impressive that this guy that said he was pretty tall, skinny and wiry growing up has developed into that frame. I saw a comment in the chat saying, do you think he's underweight for his size? He's about, you know, yeah, he's what, 314, 315? I think that's more than okay right now.
But interestingly enough, that if you read his scouting report, he's put about 100 pounds on over the course of his college career.
Right.
Evaluators think there's still room to build his, he's still developing into his body. So yeah. Who knows? That could look like 330 in 2 years.
Exactly. And that's where I was going with that, because as a rookie, he's going to come in and I'm sure that Joe Staley has taught him a lot already, because Joe Staley is 6-time Pro Bowler, 3-time All Pro, awesome player in his day, has probably already taught him quite a bit about what to expect in the NFL. But when he has a full year of being in a program with an NFL team in terms of the eating habits, in terms of working out, he's going to add on to that frame, muscle, some extra weight. So, but coming in at 314, I don't think that's a problem whatsoever. I think, like you said, though, you can get him up to 330, 335, 340. No questions asked, no problem. So, yeah, there's still room to grow, but I like where he's coming in at. We are one injury away before this pick from Bobby Hart coming in and starting for the Bills for Darrell Williams, or for Deion Dawkins if something happened. And I'm not trying to knock any players on the Bills roster, but there were literally, and I'm not joking, you can go on Twitter and look, there were Bengals fans who openly celebrated the fact that the Bengals finally did not bring back Bobby Hart. They said this, you know, and he was more so a starter there, but it was an issue to have him there. It wasn't good for a young quarterback. So bring someone in round three that could year one, day one, be your swing tackle and maybe eventually replace Darrell Williams. I would say 3 years from now, I wouldn't be pushing Darrell Williams out of the door as long as he's still playing at a high level, because tackle is one of those premium positions. It's so important. He's played well for this regime. I think that they were able to get him at that discount the year before that because he was all over the line in Carolina. I still think if they would have kept him at one spot, he would have fared very well there too. So the talent's still there. Let him learn from these two offensive tackles. And then when the time is right, 3 years from now, then maybe he becomes the eventual starting right tackle.
Question in the chat here, asking about how much the Chiefs have improved. Are you worried about the Chiefs O-line getting Creed Humphrey a couple picks after the Bills took Basham? Bills are getting edge, but Chiefs are shoring up the line, and I think that's a great observation. I mean, if you look at their depth chart right now, Orlando Brown, Joe Tooney, potentially Creed Humphrey if he could beat out Austin Blythe at center, Lauren Duvernay-Tardif, Mike Remmers, and they also have Lucas Niang, who they really like a lot. They also signed Kyle Long to just see what's left in the tank there. They got really deep really quickly with a lot of questions going into the offseason. So I think that's a great point. And listen, how many times are you really going to get into a battle with a Patrick Mahomes driven team with an offensive line like they had in the Super Bowl? That was just, you know, the scenario that played out last year. You got to go into a year knowing that, you know, they're going to shore up what they need to do. Just like the Bills, I think in a lot of ways, the Spencer Brown pick is, you know, it's not only made for right now to have a swing tackle, but in 2-3 years, you want to keep improving that line. And if you can get a upgrade over, you know, either of the guys that are there right now, I think Deion Dawkins is a top 6-7 left tackle in the league. Darrell Williams played like one last year, but you know, you want to get younger, you want to get cheaper, you want to get you want to be ahead of the curve. And I think that's one of the things that Brandon Bean's done so well. He does a good job of keeping the roster in a you know, current events type of mindset, but also with an eye on the future. And one of the big things here is I don't think we're talking enough about how much, even with the ballooned cap, the potential for the lack of salary cap dollars when you're looking down the line 2-3 years, when you have to start handing out these big contracts, you need some of these kinds of contracts. You're going to see, I think you're going to see contracts all over the place. I mean, you know, if Dawson Knox has like a good solid year this year, like, right, like let's say he puts up a Jared Cook like year, 8 touchdowns, 800 yards, something like that, right? And you know, so that's year three, and then he comes back and replicates that in year four. He's going to be expensive. Like, he's not going to be crazy expensive, but he's going to be, you're going to have to give him a pretty good deal. You're going to have to give him, you know, probably a little bit under what Jonnu Smith got, like probably what, 9 to 10 million a year. That's a big contract to hand out. So I wouldn't even be surprised. I mean, you were talking about it earlier today. Maybe Pat Freiermuth was a guy that they could target on day two. But, you know, I could see them looking to draft a tight end round one, round two in the next year's draft to prepare for those kinds of scenarios to play out as they move along year to year in this build. Well, yeah, it's built now.
Yeah. You know, you always have to be thinking long term. Going back to the fan question there about the Chiefs, they did a great job this year in terms of upgrading the offensive line. One thing I'll say is that trade for Orlando Brown could end up being a disaster if they don't extend him. I know a lot of fans assume that's on the table. It's going to happen. But until it does, they traded away some valuable assets for a one-year rental who, if he plays really well over the course of this season, he's going to want big money. And I know the salary cap can be manipulated. We've seen teams do it time and time again. But it feels like the Chiefs are getting to that point where they have so many big salaries on their roster that can they afford to pay a left tackle? $20 million a year, whatever the case may be in terms of what Orlando Brown's looking for. Creed Humphrey, I liked Creed Humphrey. We were talking about it at second round pick that maybe the Bills would be leaning that way, and then he fell and he slipped. There must be something that led to that slip, that led to that fall to a certain extent. So I still think that's a solid pick for the Chiefs. Don't get me wrong there. So they definitely improved in the short term. We'll see what it leads to, but just like any other position, offensive tackle, offensive line, defensive line, if the Bills and the Chiefs face off this upcoming season, the AFC Championship again, you can't predict injuries, but both teams will be banged up at that point in the year. So these pass rushers having so much depth here could lead to the Bills getting pressure on Mahomes. The upgrades that the Chiefs made could lead to them not only shutting down the Bills again, but then getting to the Super Bowl and facing a team like Tampa Bay again and not being fazed by the pressure. So, yeah, you just never know year by year what's going to happen. But kudos to them for upgrading their offensive line, and kudos to the Bills for addressing a need that was certainly pressing on the defensive line.
Mitchell asks about the other AFC East team drafts, and I like to get into that a little bit today. We can review all three of those teams because they've all gotten better. I mean, Brandon said it yesterday, and you know, when two teams draft a quarterback in the first round in your division, it opens your eyes. And you know, it's not surprisingly that he followed suit by drafting two edge rushers in the same draft. So that's interesting enough. But I also want to say just a little, like, you know, bullet point here for fans: pay attention. If you can, when Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott are talking about the way that they do things here, you know what I mean? The way they set up, you know, their draft boards, the way that they evaluate players, and also, you know, how they view their team. And I think that in a lot of ways we forget like what they're good at and what they've kind of shown in terms of their trends over the last couple of years. We talked about it going in this draft. They haven't drafted a cornerback on day one or day two since Tre'Davious White. And that's kind of the model that's worked for them. And I think that that's kind of always in their back pocket when they go into these drafts. It's like, okay, if we feel like the value is there and we can get a really good corner, fine. If not, we have the faith that we can find a corner on day three. And I'd imagine that another corner is coming tomorrow and we can develop them. And if not, we have Levi Wallace, who we think we can rely on. We can go back out and get a Josh Norman if we have to. I mean, if he's going to come back and play one more year, I think that they'd be fine with that trio to compete for that cornerback two job. And then in the slot, they really like Cam Lewis. And honestly, I'd like to see Cam Lewis on the outside in the preseason again. He was having a really good preseason on the outside 2 years ago before he got hurt. I think he got the concussion in the Carolina game, in that preseason game. Let's get into the AFC East before we get out of here, and then we'll quickly sprinkle a couple potential options for day three. We talked about what everybody did yesterday, and then today the Jets come out firing once again after taking Zach Wilson yesterday, trading up for Elijah Vera Tucker. They go out and they get Elijah Moore, wide receiver from Ole Miss. And, you know, that's a really important pick for the Jets, Ryan, because they go out and they sign Corey Davis. They have Jamison Crowder. They drafted Denzel Mims last year. So they're starting to build, you know, a basketball starting five with their, you know, their skill players. And that is a really nice collection of talent. They all kind of do different things. And all of a sudden, let's see who else the Jets took in this draft. Or they traded up, so they didn't have a third round pick. So they'll draft again the second pick of round four. But I think getting up and getting Vera Tucker, getting a solid stout player that you can either place on the interior or put at one of the tackle spots, the tackle spot opposite Mekhi Becton if you want to. You're building around Zach Wilson in a really strong way.
Yeah, and it's going to come down to Zach Wilson. If he's the guy, he's going to have no shortage of weapons there at wide receiver now. Like you said, that four wide receiver set's legit. We've talked about the tight end position in the past with guys like, you know, Chris Herndon and things like that. Elijah Vera Tucker, I like him. I don't know if I liked him as much as the Jets based on all those picks that they used to move up to get him. But I do feel like Joe Douglas did a really good job last year drafting. I think he's done a really good job this year drafting. So I feel like they are on the right track in terms of turning things around. Are they going to be a team in contention in the East this year? I still don't see that yet, especially with a rookie quarterback, but they're on the right track. The Dolphins are interesting because I feel like they've done some good things. But I also feel like, in a way, it's been a bad draft for them. And I know that sounds confusing. They were in a position to get one of those playmakers, and they kind of moved around a little bit on the draft board, and they end up going to six. And Jaylen Waddle, very good player, and I know that they've already come out and said if Kyle Pitts and Jamar Chase were on the board, they still were going to take Jaylen Waddle. I don't believe that for one second. I'm sorry, I don't. You moved around a little bit too far, and I think they were guessing there'd be one more quarterback taken, and one of those premier talents would be available for them. It didn't work out that way, so that kind of was a head-scratcher. There was a lot of talk about the Dolphins addressing the running back position in this year's draft, and in round two, it looked like they were in prime position to get Javonte Williams. And what did they do? They let the Broncos leapfrog them, and I have no idea what the Broncos are doing at running back. They are so confusing with that in terms of who they let leave, who they sign, and now who they draft. But they still let a team leapfrog them, and then that leads the Dolphins to kind of scramble and take a safety. And was safety a need? Yes. But they didn't even take Morig there. They took – I can't remember who it was now, but it wasn't –
Javon Holland.
Thank you. Javon Holland, who's a solid player, but on most boards he was not the number one safety. So – They upgraded their talent, but I also feel like at the end of the day, they could have done better if they would have been a little bit more aggressive, if they would have stayed put where they were. And I get it. You want more assets in future years. You want more draft picks. When teams come calling with all those picks, it's hard to say no. I just feel like that it's been a little underwhelming for them. Patriots, though, I like what they're doing too. Love the Barmore pick here today. So they're doing a lot of really good things. They were really aggressive in free agency, so they're trying to close that gap quickly.
So I'll disagree with you a little bit on the Miami front. I think that, well, I'll agree with you on one piece and I'll disagree on another piece. I think a few people are overreacting to Jaylen Waddle. I'm not convinced that he's any better than Henry Ruggs. As a matter of fact, I was talking to somebody the other day that said if they were if they put all the top three receivers from last year and the top three receivers from this year's draft together, this specific person had Waddle under Henry Ruggs. And so from that perspective, I just think we saw last year those smaller, like, toolsy, speedy receivers. I mean, they got to fit the right place, especially early on in their career, to be game changers. And I think with Tua at quarterback, there's a lot of questions there. And that's what it all comes back to. I think somebody tweeted it. I think it was John Scott, maybe, like, you could do all these draft picks that you want and get all these players that you want, but if Tua is going to be the Tua that was in 2020, the Miami Dolphins are going nowhere quick. I expect him to be better. How big of a jump he takes in year two, we'll find out. If it's a Josh Allen, Josh Allen esque jump.
It was an alien esque jump, though. The way, you know, it works.
It's late, you know, just throwing stuff at the wall, seeing what sticks. And if there's that kind of jump, I think they could be good. I think they could be, you know, a better team. But I still don't think that they're a team you fear in that scenario. You think you need a bigger jump. And I also want to see when things don't go well, what do they do with Tua now? Do they let him fight through it? What if he fights through it and you learn that he can't fight through it, or things go from bad to worse? So there's all these little, you know, as much as that roster has just been built beautifully, it really doesn't matter. I really like the Liam Eichenberg pick. I read a lot of things where, you know, he had a first round grade on a lot of really plugged in draft experts board. So I thought that was a nice pick. And then they come back and they get a tight end in the third round. We'll see Hunter Long. He was 4 or 5, depending on who you looked at. So they're just throwing a bunch. They're just gathering talent. They're using all of these assets. And I think that they're better. And I think they have the second best roster in the AFC East. In terms of the Patriots, it's interesting. I think it's going to come down to Mac Jones. How good is he going to be? I think he probably landed in the best place possible for him to unlock that potential. Other than San Francisco, I think landing with Kyle Shanahan would have been great. But, you know, if there are these similarities between him and Brady, I really think that Josh McDaniels could probably tap into that. And if he's as bright and on it as you know, people have written about, I think he can transition pretty quickly. I still think Cam goes into the year as a starter, but it's going to be a very short leash if Mac Jones shows anything in the preseason. Then, yeah, Barrymore was fine. I think that they just churn out good interior defensive linemen usually, but, you know, Bill Belichick finds those guys. And then Ronnie Perkins going out and getting an edge rusher. I thought that was a sneaky need for – I know they brought back Kyle Van Noy and they brought in Matthew Judon, but, you know, they have Josh Uche, who they drafted last year. He didn't really pop. So adding another guy to the mix, to the competition there, you know, they're getting pretty deep at a couple different slots. So, yeah, I think I like a lot of the stuff that we saw in the AFC East.
Yeah, the division's getting better. You know, the Bills won the division for the first time in a long time this year. And no one should have sat there and said, okay, this is going to be the division for the next decade, and those other teams are just going to sit there in mediocrity. It's not going to happen. They're all trying to get better. They're all going after those quarterbacks of the future. Tua last year, Wilson this year, Mac Jones this year. So they're all going for it. They're all trying to close that gap. Nothing's going to be handed to the Bills this year, but they are going to be going against quite a few inexperienced quarterbacks this year based on if a lot of these younger guys play. So I still think the Bills are in good position in 2021, but each passing year, the more these quarterbacks develop, the more these rosters have that overturn, and the more talent you add, it's going to get harder and harder for the Bills to replicate the success that they had 1 year ago.
I have to give grades for each draft pick. I write the 5 thoughts on a grade for each story. But at the same time, I don't really believe in grading a draft when the draft actually happens. And that's a, you know, conversation going on in the comments right now. Somebody said, I believe it was Jay Davis on YouTube, C- at best for the Bills so far. And I think it's really difficult to kind of put a letter grade on a draft, especially with a group of players that are so much projections. And I think, like, we throw that word around this time of year, projecting, like, what guys can be. These are all projections. Unless you're getting Chase Young or Joey Bosa, you're projecting what a guy's going to do at the next level. And so to grade that, I mean, you're basically placing a grade value on how you think the Bills are going to coach them, what they're going to, how they're going to connect with them behind the scenes, what the personality dynamics are like to cultivate that development. And those are just things that I would never be comfortable, you know, emphatically or, you know, saying what's going to happen in that department. So I think the best thing to do is to remember one thing. I think I saw this, somebody tweet this, is Brandon Bean is the reigning, defending NFL executive of the year. And I think sometimes Joe Nelson says I'm a cop-out because giving a letter grade is the point. I do give the letter grade. And I gave a letter grade. I gave a letter grade to the Gregory Rousseau pick yesterday. And guess where you could see that letter grade? Syracuse.com. Read the story, my friend, and you will see the letter grade. I'm just saying, like, I don't get it. I don't get the whole, you know, letter grade grading phenomenon. With it's fun because you can kind of, you know, power rank, you know, how teams did. But you know, at the end of the day, until I see them play an NFL snap, I'm not going to grade a college prospect.
No, and that's fair. And, you know, the other thing, too, is a lot of these national analysts that do it all the time, not only do they attach a grade to it, they attach some hot takes, and then a few years later, they're on those websites for being so wrong about some of these players one way or the other that you're kind of putting yourself in a bad position. So, yeah, you know, for the sake of the articles, you do give that letter grade. But you really can't look back on a draft class until two or three years later because, again, remember the Josh Allen pick. How many people bashed? How many people said that the Bills were setting themselves back a decade? I was looking at some of those tweets again this past week. Someone said how the Bills love mediocrity and someone, you know, he'll be throwing interceptions or incomplete passes in Foxborough for the next decade. Little things like that, and then you look at the development. No one saw that coming. The majority wanted Rosen over Allen, so on and so forth. Everyone thought Darnold was a slam dunk for the Jets. No one knows. You can look at the college game. You can look at the skill sets, but you don't know how that's going to transition over to the NFL based on the team, based on the talent, based on the development, based on the chemistry that they have, even within the locker room, within the coaching staff. All these little things factor into building a team up. And Josh Allen has had the perfect storm of player development around him, his own development, the coaching, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, it's just one of those wait and see scenarios. Give it time, and then we'll really know here in a few years.
See if I can get this to work here. Saw this shared on Twitter, and I thought the video component of the show, folks would love to see this. Let me see if I can get this
figured out. It's playing.
Oh, yeah, it is. Look at that. Let me see if I could scroll up a little bit. So it's all right, here we go. Spencer Brown, your new offensive tackle, swing tackle. 500 pounds on the bench. I mean, just watching this stuff, man, it's crazy. In my prime, I could get maybe 200, 220 up probably one time. Look at this dude. That's crazy.
That's nuts.
500 pounds. I love watching these videos, the post video celebrations. Another cool tidbit. If you haven't seen it, tweeted it or talked about yet, I'll write about this probably at some point tomorrow. Spencer Brown lives in a town of 1,300 people in Lenox, Iowa, and he had 40 or 50 people over at his house tonight, hoping that his name would be called in at some point on day two. And by the time that the pick was made, 40, 50 people, he said, 5 minutes after that, he said he thought, you know, there was a couple hundred out on his front lawn, and you know they were worried that the whole town was going to show up at the house, I guess. So really cool moment. You can see that video posted on social media as well. All right, final takes here, Ryan, and maybe let's get into, before we get out of here, you know, who you're looking at tomorrow. Now we can dial in on some needs, you know, cornerback. I know you talked a little bit about tight end and maybe another position, one technique, defensive tackle. What do you see as the glaring needs here that you want them to address, and who are maybe a player or two that they can look at?
Yeah, I don't know about any glaring needs, but they can address some of these positions that fans have talked about here Cornerback, you know, whether you're talking outside or inside, there's going to be different options. If the Bills get lucky, maybe a Sean Wade slides all the way to round five out of Ohio State. I'm not sure if that's realistic or not, but time will tell. Buffalo did their due diligence on him, met with him a few times during the draft process. Could end up being a really good slot cornerback, which is more important than Bills fans realize, I think, because Taron Johnson's entering the final year of his contract with the Bills, so you want to look for a replacement there possibly. There are still some big men up front on the defensive line. I know, haven't we had enough defensive linemen? I'm sorry, Bills Mafia, but if you can get a one technique that can be the heir apparent to Star Latulele on day three of the draft, by all means, try to upgrade that position. There are still some names out there that were fan favorites in mock drafts. I can't say that I was paying perfect attention to all the picks after the Bills and around the Bills picks. But there's guys like Hamson, Nasrildeen. Was he taken yet?
Nope.
I don't know. See, I mean, that was a player that we were talking about round two, round three. He's still there. So there's a fan favorite. I know Daz Newsome didn't test well at wide receiver, but the Bills did their due diligence on him, met with him a few times on Zoom, went to his pro day. He's a day three type of player at wide receiver that they might kind of bring in here. So there's players across the board that I think could be intriguing for the Bills. But they're not going to sit here and say, we have to get a cornerback. We have to get a wide receiver or a tight end. They're staying true to their board.
Yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head with, what they're probably looking at. A couple players that I think could be interesting at cornerback. I like, Robert Rochelle as a day three guy out of Central Arkansas. I think that he might be somebody that they like as well. I think I it might've been Cover One or somebody. He has a round three grade according to Lance Zierlein. Probably goes sometime in the fourth round, so we'll see if he gets there. Maybe if the Bills see a guy like him that they like, they might be willing to trade up. And also Kerry Vincent from LSU, I think, is a I can't remember if it's character concerns or injury concerns. I think he missed most of this last season, or I don't know if he opted out or if it was injuries. But I saw on one big board that he was like the second or third ranked cornerback on this guy's big board. Mm-hmm. And it was eye popping to me because that wasn't common in for most of them. So that's another name to keep an eye on. And then the big guys in the middle, Bobby Brown, cool name, Bobby Brown III, over at Texas A&M, 321, 6'4", space eater, Tyler Shelvin. Obviously, Bills Mafia loves them some Tyler Shelvin. He's could be on play too. And another guy, go back to the pro day interviews, Dylan Moses. I think the Bills could be really interested in maybe if he falls to them in the fifth round, former projected day one pick probably before some injury issues, the linebacker from Alabama. So a lot of names to consider.
Yeah. One technique, Tonga is his name, and I had him in my last mock. He's going to be there. Jacoby Stevens, someone that the Bills have shown interest in out of LSU, is still around. So there are names to be had, and I believe that Rochelle that you mentioned, I believe his skill set is almost perfect for zone defense is what I read on a lot of the scouting reports, and obviously the Bills run a lot of zone, so he could end up being a great asset there too. So a lot of talent still to be had.
Kevin Massari has jokes.
That's right. He does.
Kevin, get out of here with your jokes. I still have issues with your original big board putting Quiddy Pay at three or four. Nonsense. But I went on the Trainwreck Sports the other day, and that drives me nuts when people go on other people's posts when they're like giving like rankings or something like that and just start publicly just, sifting through them. And Kevin's like, oh no, just bring it on. I want that. And I'm like, you do want that. But I can't say a bad word about Kevin Massari because he put me on to Yummy Thai in Kenmore, which is bomb. As my wife says, bomb.com. And you should go check it out. All right. That's going to do it. We've gone for almost an hour. Day two of the draft is in the books. It's going to be fun to see what the Bills can do tomorrow if they maybe get back up into the fourth round. For Ryan Talbot, I'm Matt Parrino. Head over to Syracuse.com in the morning. Everything will be up over there. I'll have my five thoughts and a grade on both of these picks today. We'll have some other, we'll have some more fun content tomorrow, some stuff from Brandon Bean. And yeah, we'll see you then. Four more picks to go. Have a great night, everybody.